Baxter Bowman Podcast. If you're obsessed with the strategies, gear, and stories that will make you a better backcountry bow hunter, you're in the right place. We're independent, unsponsored, and unbiased, so we can cut the fluff and give you detailed advice on what really works and what doesn't. Today's episode is the last one for our 2021 elk season. We're going to talk all about whether or not Josh got his bull and a bunch of other hunting I got to do with my wife.
All righty.
All right, should I do it? Today's episode is the last episode on our 2021 elk hunting season. Josh is going to talk all about Today's last episode, did Josh get his bull? Today's episode is the last episode of our 2021 elk season. No, I don't know if that's true, actually. Right? Because we might do like a retro.
Oh, yeah. And then you can also talk about maybe Margaret, too. Lessons there. And
yeah. It probably is the last one.
Yeah.
I guess. Because, I mean, because you were not going to take more than 15 more minutes to talk about yours, probably, right?
Oh, mine. Yeah. Okay. Mine is the last one.
Okay. Well, let me do the... Today's episode is the last one for our 2021 elk season. We're going to talk all about whether or not Josh got his bull and a bunch of other hunting I got to do with my wife. All right. So cliffhanger. Hopefully a lot of guys are going straight from the last one to this one. So I feel bad about that, but you know.
For the people who have to wait a week or two to find out what happens.
I mean, the reality of these things is we only have a set amount of time and we kind of have to fit it in or not. So, but I think, you know, before we stopped where, you know, we bumped that one, you know, the night after you, night of you shooting it. And before we dive into that, like, I think we didn't quite hit some of the, like the bigger questions. We were kind of hurrying to get that episode done. Like what, like how did you feel after you shot that elk? Like what were the things that went through your head?
Wow. That's a good question. So let's see. Right after I shot it, first I was like, I can't believe that just happened because we were just coming off of like, oh, they all ran away. So first it was a little bit of like gratitude and shock mixed together. Mm-hmm. And then immediately after that was like, oh, I just hope it was a good shot. And so I immediately after that shot, you know, I didn't see exactly where it went. I thought I maybe had just hit it full mid body. Mm-hmm. And then I ranged it and found out it was 50 when I aimed for 40. And that caused me to worry a little bit more. Although the stumble, the wobble gave me confidence. So it was just kind of one part of me felt excited and confident and grateful and shocked and happy that it happened. And the other part of me was like, he ran. I hope we find him. I just hope it was a good shot. And I'm not sure about the shot. That's how I felt.
Did you? It's funny because I think if I'd asked you how you think you were going to feel, you're going to probably talk about all your emotions about your first time shooting an elk. But what's funny and stands out to me there is you're like thinking more about the moment. You're like, oh man, I don't know if I'm going to find it. I'm going to, you know, like your brain was very much just computing what was actually going on.
Right. Yeah. I felt good. I felt. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever have like full transparency when we talked about this, right? You'd been like, I'm like, I'd shoot anything. Did you ever have a moment of like, do I want to shoot this or not? Or were you just like full bore?
No.
Like it's dead.
Full bore. As soon as he walked out, I was like, this guy, this is it.
Yeah. Brownie's down. I'm joining the, I'm not going for Boone and Crockett. I'm going for Spoon and Crockpot Club.
Spoon and Crockpot. Exactly.
I heard that in the podcast. Thought I had to bring that up.
Nice. I did. Yeah. When I saw the calf, I did not have even a moment of wanting to shoot it. I will say that.
Yeah. That's good. Because I feared for that thing's life.
Yeah. I did not. It didn't even cross my mind. I was like, oh, this cute little guy. Like, get out of here. What are you doing here?
Scram.
Yeah.
Even though he's bigger than a deer.
Right? I know.
Pretty funny. Mountain veal. Yeah, I think it was the Hunt Backcountry podcast. Those guys are great. But shooting spikes is in vogue these days, Josh. You're ahead of the curve.
Oh, yeah? Nice.
It's true. Can't argue with that being the best tasting thing on deer species on the planet. Well, axis deer, you know. Okay, so let's finish it off for the people that were patient enough to come back. So we bump him. We followed him. I don't even know if we did the talked about following him, but we followed him, what, 300-400 yards, I think it was.
After we bumped him?
After we bumped him, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And again, I still was being very impatient. I was just like, just so caught in the moment. I thought I found his trail and I went down the hill a little bit further from you.
Yeah.
And I kept going and going, following this trail because there's so many elk trails out there.
Yeah.
And I just kept thinking like, just any minute he's going to be right there. Any minute he's going to be right there. And you're back, you know, I get to probably 100 yards in front of you. You're back there. I come back and you're going inch by inch.
Yeah. Well, I think there was a point where you're like 50 or 100 yards. And I was like, Josh, like, I don't think you're on the, like, I don't think you're on the trail. Yeah. You got to learn patience the hard way for sure.
Yeah. First time tracking animal, I'm just like, he must be right there.
No, yeah.
Nope. That's not how you do it.
I think it's a good nugget for guys that are listening is that Idaho, there's a lot of differences between Colorado and Idaho. We've talked about them and I didn't get, everyone thinks I probably got way too granular. Trust me, I didn't get as granular as I could have. But like one of the real big differences is tracking. So Idaho is almost universally this really sandy, dry dirt, right? It's almost not even like physical dirt. It's more like rock a lot of the time. Is that fair?
Yeah. Rocky, sandy.
Like pumice-y almost stuff, right? And so it makes the track, like there's the blood trails in Idaho are like horrible. You're not going to like, if it falls on quote unquote dirt, you're not going to see it.
Right. It'll look like a black spot.
Yeah. So I think the reality of hunting in Idaho is it's always louder. It's always crackly and poppy. So it's really hard to sneak in on things. Your blood trails are really difficult. I think it's far easier to see elk, but far harder to actually shoot one than Colorado. Mm. And I think tracking is one of the areas that's brutal in Idaho. So I've had to learn. I'm bringing it back. Don't worry. I see the whole reason I say that is I've had to learn the hard way to really pay attention in Idaho because the only thing you're going to get, this is probably a fair assessment a lot of places too, but the only thing you're going to get are prints. Right? You might get blood.
Or if you have a great shot, if you have a great shot, maybe you'll get a blood trail, but I just didn't have a great shot. So
I mean, it's got to be just spraying to get a blood trail in Idaho. That's good. Unless they're in a really wooded area. And that was kind of the saving grace for us, honestly, is that he was actually bleeding a decent amount. It just wasn't a high volume. There was just a lot of small droplets.
Yeah.
And every now and then, pretty much anytime he got over a log that was what, more than 2 or 3 inches, we'd find a blood spot on it.
Yeah. Just one spot on a log or a little branch, one spot. And we just kept going a spot at a time, basically.
Yeah. Well, they were like, this is a very open-ish area. There are trees, but they're probably every tree was probably 20 yards apart, something like that. Very sparse. And so it was a game of like really follow the footprints until you got to a log. And then if you got to the log, it was like, no, I don't see any blood on this. Maybe that was the wrong set. And you'd go back, follow the others. And then, there's the blood drop. You know, that's him. Mm-hmm. So it was really, really intense. Took a long time to trail him, but it was after that other bump. We probably should have left at that point. But like you said, I was like, this thing is, I mean, the size of the blood pool where he was laying down was big. Mm-hmm. It was very big. So I'm like, he cannot be going far. So I thought it was worth pushing forward. And we got what, like I said, 400 yards. And then we said the sun was going down at that point, I think, right?
Yeah. I think we were trailing for probably an hour and a half.
To go 400 yards. Yeah.
Yeah. Just so slow. Yeah.
So slow.
And then we put a little piece of flagging tape there because it was basically going to be dark. And
that was it. Then we're out of there. Mm-hmm. Long hike up the hill.
Yes. Long hike up the hill. Wow. Yeah.
So where was your head? I'm going to you first and then I'll talk about where my head was.
Yeah. So for me, I had a little bit of like, we should have given him more time. He'd be dead. And then, but not maybe like 5% of my thoughts were like some regret and 95 were like, we're going to find him. It's going to be okay. He's going to be cold. We just got to keep going down this and we're going to find him. Actually, no, let's say 5% of my thoughts were regret. Maybe like 80% was like, we're going to find him. And then the leftover 15% was like, oh no, what if we don't find him? Like, that's going to be really hard to like deal with. And I tried to just block out those thoughts.
Yeah. So you're an optimist.
Yeah, I am. I'm the most optimistic person I know.
Actually. I was going to say, I know that about you. I'm pretty anal retentive and I'm fairly pessimistic.
Yeah. So what was going through your head at that time, that hike up, like, after the flagging tape?
I was like, oh, this is 50-50 at this point.
Oh, really? You were just like 50-50?
I was like, this is bad. This is real bad. This is everything you don't want to do.
Oh, no.
And I just, in my mind, I was like, I think the whole game is keeping you positive, but not, I don't know if you figured it out, but I wasn't like blowing smoke because I was starting to try to let you down softly. You know, like I was like, if we don't find this elk, I don't want Josh to like stop behind the rest of his life. So I was kind of, there was just a lot going through my head around like, how are we managing Josh's mentality right now?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Because you already know I'm very positive. So for me, I was like, oh, I'm going to try to make sure Baxter feels positive about this. Yeah. That's what was going through my head. But I didn't realize you were also trying to make sure that because it's a very real chance that we don't find. Yeah, that's interesting to not overhype it. Like, oh, don't worry, Josh, we'll find it. And then.
Yeah. Because I think the hard thing is that it's hard on a podcast, but that open side of that valley could go right around the corner. He could go down into the bottom. He could have doubled back and gone over the top. Like there were a lot of ways he could have gone.
Yeah.
And it was like a ton of elk right through there, right before him. And so I'm just like, ooh, please do not. Yeah. Fortunately, like I've learned over time that elk almost always, once they start moving in a straight line, even when it comes to elk trails, they'll go in that straight line. Yeah. They might go completely the wrong direction for 20 feet or 20 yards, but like they kind of want to go in a direction. So I was just hoping he wanted to keep going in that direction because it was kind of back towards the car. Like it was going the right way.
Right.
But I don't know. There were just lots of thoughts in me of like, this is the wrong place for something to decide it wants to run.
Yeah. It was like this long hillside and it goes down and into nasty stuff if you just keep going. And so we hike up and at least we cooked a good backpacking meal. Wait, is that, did you forget your backpack?
I forgot my stove.
That's right.
In fact, no.
No, you forgot your meal, right?
I remembered my stove. We were like, let's bring one stove. And I was like, oh, I got you. No big deal.
Yeah.
And so I brought my stove and then I forgot a meal.
You forgot your backpacking meal, which is the one to look forward to.
But I don't know. I was feeling pretty good at that point and whatever. So you made a meal. Yeah, I was surprised. You were like eating. You were generally doing pretty well. A lot of guys, it really gets to them when they're thinking about where's the elk at, what's going on.
Yeah.
Did pretty well, just kind of keeping it cool. And then we pretty much just ate for like 30 minutes, went straight to bed. We were both pretty tired, I think.
Yeah, and I fell straight to sleep. I don't know. Maybe it's just overly optimistic. I was like fairly certain we would find, and also I mean maybe this is a common theme, just like when we were packing out your elk in the dark pitch black.
I
was just following you like, oh yeah, we're gonna be fine, we're gonna back. But it's easy for me to say because I'm just following you. You're the one leading with the, oh crap, like you're the one who's got to kind of lead this.
I'm doing
thing,
the so. Math
No,
I was thinking about it and it is easier. I think it is. You can give artificial confidence, right? I think you're probably like, oh, Baxter's here.
Yep.
He's already corrected me twice. You're like, he'll figure it out no matter what.
Yep. He's done this before.
But I kind of am like, well, I've done this before and I know. Like, this is tough. So whatever it was, if that gave you great sleep, that was a magic, because the reality of that is you can do literally jack other than get great sleep. So you're in a good mood and attitude the next morning. So
yeah, you can't change it. There's nothing you can do to change the situation. So every moment of regret, every moment of even hope or rumination is literally no utility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Literally the best thing you can do is get a good night's sleep, because that's just going to change your everything the next morning. And I think I actually slept. I think that was one of the best nights of sleep for me. Although I brought that Kuyu Super Down Ultra or Pro or whatever the thick one is. And, golly, that thing is freaking warm
and light.
So light, but like nuclear warm. And so I slept like a little tiny cod baby.
That's awesome.
Passed out. I think you slept pretty well too. It was Yeah, that was
took
a good night.
I took out the Kindle, was reading a book about mindfulness. And then I just went to sleep. And I don't even think I woke up. We had good campsites too.
It was great. Yeah, we definitely chose a good one. It was down a little notch. Yeah, it was perfect. Yeah, so it was, what, we woke up 7-ish next morning? I forget, like basically when the sun came up, we were going to get up a little earlier, but I think we both just slept well and took our time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went straight into packing everything, right? Just instantly woke up and shoved it all in the pack because we knew we were going. The elk was between us and camp. So it was like, we're going one way no matter what.
Yep. So we got tent, everything broken down. And then we just walked back to the flagging, to the flag. Yeah.
And then we got to that flagging and start basically did the same thing as the night before. Super stinking slow. Mm-hmm. It probably took us 45 minutes, 50 minutes.
Yeah. 45.
We go another 100-ish yards.
We went another 100-ish, just spot after spot, track after track. And then we see this scuffle track.
Yeah. Well, this was right before the scuffle. There's this kind of giant tangle of trees. And I had a really hard time in there. Remember that? Probably took me 15 minutes to figure out where he went from that.
Yeah. There were a few times where we kind of went, did he go down? And then we're like, maybe he went up and we would go that way a little bit and then have to backtrack.
He was doing weird stuff. You know, the textbooks will tell you elk always go side hill or downhill when they're wounded. They da 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 da. But he went up. Remember that? He ended up going straight up the hill around that deadfall.
Mm-hmm.
Which, spoiler alert, you know, like he wasn't that far from that at the end of it. But so we got up, we went up above that thing. So I think that's a great one for guys. Like textbook, there's rules and elk always break them, you know. But what happened? We were walking that little trail probably 30 yards after it. And which is that little scuffle. Yeah, I'm like looking down. I'm like, what the hell's up with this? There's like a hell of a lot going on right here on the trail.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened then?
Yeah. And then I just, you know, we're going straight downhills to my left. So we see the scuffle. And then I just look to my left and he's right there, maybe 20 yards down the hill.
Like 10, stuck 15.
Just stuck in a bush.
Yeah.
Basically.
Right. Stinking there. Yeah.
Yep. Just see his butt. And I'm like, actually, I found him. We're like, he's right there.
I'd walk by him pretty much. Yeah, I was like past the scuffle at that point, I think.
Yeah, just a couple of steps and you're like, you found him.
Yeah.
And just the emotions there, like the relief, the joy, like, it's just not over until you find it, you know. And for it to all come down to that, just the highs and lows of this whole journey. I mean, my goodness.
Do you think that was like the best moment of all when you found him, or was it when you shot him?
Definitely when I found him.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was cool. I remember being pretty pumped because I was, like I said, I was like, I wonder if this is going to happen.
And
All worked out.
Yeah.
But a lot of things, a lot of really like fascinating postscript things that I want to talk a little more about, like what you're doing. But one is he only went 100 yards where we stopped, past where we stopped the night before, if that, like probably 150. And so he really didn't go far. In the grand scheme of things, he only went 500 yards, which is not that bad. And then also, to defend you a little bit, your shot was placed really, really well. It was low for sure. It was only 4 or 5 inches above the brisket, but it was like basically a heart shot.
Yeah.
And it went out the middle on the other side. So he was quartering towards you. So it was really interesting because I know you were like, man, I felt like I was center.
Mm-hmm.
But you were actually like spot on with that shot. It just ranged back into guts on the other side because of
quartering.
So I honestly, like, I'm amazed at that shot, that thing lived, because you went in one lung pretty much right next to a heart and
came out liver.
Guts. Yeah, liver. So he got a full blower. It was a good shot. And I'm very surprised he went as far as he did. But young ones, right?
Thanks for the compliment. It was interesting because I just thought he was full broadside. And so maybe it did look middle, because according to, you know, the shape that the animal is a little bit not as long of an area. So maybe it looks a little more middle.
Yep.
And then I put the 40, like, if you go behind the shoulder blade, went to like mid body. So that's why it dropped, you know, maybe 6 inches or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So that was a good lesson you taught me, is aim at the area of greatest margin for error.
Yeah.
like if I aimed at the heart, I would have shot right under him.
You would have missed. Yeah. You wouldn't have shot an elk like that.
Yeah.
I think that's just something I've learned over time is like go 2 inches behind the shoulder and halfway up the body. Cause like that's what gives you a lot of, yeah. I'm glad that worked out for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like if you take the kill zone on a paper plate or whatever, you want to hit that middle of the paper plate, not just like the heart, which is like bottom of that paper plate. So yeah, that felt good to see the shot and be like, oh, okay, actually was good. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So that was cool.
Yeah. No, that was a really cool one. And I think that, yeah, it was just an odd situation how that all worked out. But it's something I've struggled. I mean, with this one this year, with two or three other ones I've shot a little further back than I thought. And I think there's something to be said for shooting at realistic, you know, live 3D targets. But the reality of an elk, like when I show a lot of people that don't hunt elk, pictures of the elk on the ground, they all go like, oh, is that thing pregnant? Or is it like an elk has a huge middle body.
Yeah,
kind of like belly to it that rounds out. Mm-hmm. And so when it's quartering towards you, I think it looks like you said, there's some sort of visual distortion where it's far easier to shoot back on an elk than I think people realize.
Especially quartering two.
And so it's something I've had to learn the hard way, and not really, I mean, they've all died, but like every time I walk up, I'm like, wow, that's like further back than I would have thought.
Right.
So fortunately you kind of nailed it right off the bat, but man, it just goes to show it's really hard if you're shooting well, like where you're really paying attention to the break of your shot and just like not punching and like the pins floating. I don't think you'll ever really watch the arrow go into the elk that clean. It's like a rifle, right? Gotta stick your head up to see where it went. You're gonna shoot horribly, right?
Yeah, because you want that shot to surprise you. Then there it went. So
snap. So yeah, it's tough. It's really tough.
It's interesting. Last year your elk, this year your elk, and this year my elk, all quartering too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is much tougher than quartering away, I'd say, right?
Totally. Yeah. But again, all three of those elk, if you hadn't been comfortable making that happen, you would not have shot those elk. Right. Maybe my one this year if you waited a little more. Maybe.
Right.
But those other two, not. So it's,
yeah,
there's such a fine line. Yeah, I always heard that with elk hunting people, like, got to make the shot happen. I never really understood what that meant, but mm-hmm. there's such a fine line between being sure it's a really ethical shot and making sure you also get an off shot opportunity. Cause
yeah,
Margaret's the poster child for that, right? My wife, where she's had two animals, one at 20 and one at 40. She could easily kill, but, and I'm proud of her for making that call, but she like didn't shoot cause she wasn't sure how much an arrow arced at 20. And there was a tiny little branch in front of it. And then the other one, she's like, I didn't range it, so I didn't shoot. And I was like, well, how far was it? She's like 42 and it was 40. Like, crap.
Right.
But it's really possible to not kill an elk if you are too conservative, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And I'm sure I'll get critics say, hey, you didn't range it at 40 and you shot it, you know, you shot it for 40, just eyeball, and it was at 50. Like you could, you know, it's hard to really look back. And I mean, because we found it, because it died, it's easy to say like, oh, great, it was a good shot. Like it all worked out. It is hard to say though, like what was my true margin for error for really making a mistake there?
Yeah.
So we just don't know.
And also before we get hate mail, I'd also want to clarify, this isn't like hard quartering too. We're not talking like.
I thought it was broadside. I thought he was broadside. You know?
We're talking like slightly quartering towards all three of those shots, right? They're not like you're looking at the, like you literally cannot make a shot on a quartering two elk. Full stop. Unless you're shooting in front of the shoulder blade at short range, according to D, right? Like clearly that works. Yeah. But we're not talking like the shot they show you in Hunter Ed and go, don't make it. We're talking like, they're not perfectly 90. They're like 75, right?
Right.
It's hard. Shades of gray.
Because he looked fully broadside in the video that you took of me right after the shot. I was like, oh, he was perfectly broadside. Like totally. That's what I remembered it.
You said that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was just interesting.
Yeah. So it was pretty crazy. Did you, after you shot him, we got up on him. So like last question, and then we could talk, keep going. But were you like, oh man, this is awesome? Or are you like, I'm elk hunting forever? Or are you like, okay, I got my elk, I'm kind of done?
Oh my gosh, this is just the beginning. Oh, it's the launch pad. You know, it's not a destination. Yep. This is bow hunting. I heard someone say you can never master elk hunting. It's just, I think that's part of the appeal. And just also like seeing how much I learned last year compared to this year and how much more there is left to learn. gosh, it makes me really excited. And I want to build that confidence myself. Like if I was in that situation myself, I would not be feeling positive about finding that elk, you know.
You'd be looking for that elk in the wrong valley, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. That would be very different. So I still have a long, long, long way to go. You basically guided me on a hunt. I've got a lot to learn still.
Yes and no. I mean, I think you made the shot happen. Yeah, I called a little bit for you, but you made the shot happen. You put it in the exact right place. You gave yourself a huge margin of error that paid off, you know. There's little things, but like, I don't think anyone, even with 5 years of experience, I've only hunted elk 6 years total, right, at this point. Mm-hmm. And like, there's so much out on that. Like, you just can't fault yourself for not knowing that. There's so much you don't know.
Right. It's just there, out there, and this is the only way to learn. And well, yep. I got the fast pass of learning.
it's good.
But
I think I'd be 100% confident if you shot your own elk now that you'd be as good as an opportunity, if not better than anybody walking the hills of finding it and doing the right things. And you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Especially after watching that. Yeah. Just, you got to go so slow.
If in doubt, back up. That's something I've learned. I know I talk a lot about the upland bird hunting and how important that is, but like I retrieve. So no surprise, I've talked about this before. I track every shot and I track every bird. It's just like for numbers.
On an Excel spreadsheet.
Spreadsheet to understand like, well, what loads work well out of the gun. And shotguns are very much like just total black magic. But I know that I recover over 90% of birds. And I don't have a dog, right? And I think that's taught me so much about tracking, where it's like, I will say that 90%+ of the time, easy, maybe 95%, 99%, I don't know. It is where you thought it is, and it is where you thought it was going. It just, you missed it, and then you start to self-doubt.
Oh.
So it's like, for me, it's always go back to where you were, eat a snack, clear your brain, like, look, it's there. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, it's, you're going to find it. And I think that's what I've learned about elk too, is like, you just got to go so slow and be so patient, and you're going to find it. Just relax. And like, don't panic. If you panic and go step on all the tracks and run away, and you know, like, it just doesn't go well.
Yeah, that was a really important point you kept reminding me. It's like, do not step on the tracks. Like, walk besides them. Don't mess anything. It's like a detective, like a Sherlock Holmes. You do not want to mess with the evidence. And I do want to say my deepest thank you and gratitude for taking me along this journey. Almost 3 year long journey, if you think about the first scouting trip you sent me on in Colorado solo, my very first backpacking trip, September of 2019. Right.
Yep. Yeah.
2020 and then 2020. So 2021. Wow, like the time and energy you've invested in me and on this pod to do it live to you on this podcast, like this on air mentorship for other people to get to learn as well. It's just, I think the listeners and myself are very grateful for you teaching us all this stuff.
Yeah, man. It's been as much fun for me. It's not, honestly, it's not like you make it sound like I'm doing some sort of public service, but I'm having a blast. Like, it's been a real pleasure. And it meant the world to me to watch you walk up on that elk. I was like, this is one of the coolest feelings.
Yeah. Ever. Oh, your face looked fresh. I will never forget, like that face of just utter joy and like
I was relief
and so ecstatic. Just, I'll never forget that.
Well, I think that's why I was stressing. It's not just like, oh, we're not going to find an elk. Because at my point, if I didn't find one, you know, I'd be very bummed, but like, I've gotten elk before. For you on your first elk, I'm like, not like this, you know, like I really wanted that to work out. So that was part of the reason I was working my butt off tracking this. I'm like, we got to find this freaking thing.
Yeah.
So I was stoked, but
I got to butcher it fast because the sun just came out.
Yeah. So then it was, we can.
How did you feel? Yeah. Real quick. How did you feel when I was like, oh, there it is?
I was like blown away. Cause I guess I was so heads down on the tracking bit. That I was just like, I don't know. I wasn't even looking. So for me, it felt really weird that you were behind me and to the left 10 yards, just like right there. I'm like, what? How's it right there? It felt, I was really surprised for a while. And then I was stoked. Yeah, I was very excited.
Yeah.
Really, really excited. So it was a big moment for sure. But yeah, you're right. We were like, okay, now we got to go because it's going to be in the sun in like 2 hours and it's been out all night and we want to get it nice and cold. So we were hacking that little bugger up, and it was steep on that.
You had to kind of roll it down a little bit, and not the best angle for stuff. And
yep,
Yeah, there, you know, it came out the guts on the other side, so it was stinky.
Oh yeah, you kind of got a little knife in the gut cavity there on one of those quarters. Remember
that? Yeah, I remember.
However, we both got puked.
Right. This you do this so many times, and every time the animal's at a different angle or a weird way, you kind of just have to treat it like it's a new time again, and forget everything. Because when we butchered yours, it was perfectly flat, great conditions.
Yeah. You did it totally fine. Yeah, it was just it's just a weird angle and a weird way of doing it. But the thing that surprised me most about that butchering is that for some reason in your head you hear spike and everyone talks about them like they're some sort of little dink, but they're not that small. Like, I mean, he was, I'd say what, probably 60% of the meat of a full grown one, 70%. I mean, it was not like 50% or something, like half the meat. It was like, you know, almost as much, like a lot of meat.
Yeah. It was a good amount of meat. Certainly not as much as yours or yours last year, but
it wasn't half. It was small. Like 60, 70. Yeah.
It's not like a white tailed deer. Not even close.
Oh, it was like still double and a half a deer. Yeah. Yeah. So it was, so that was, I was kind of surprised. I'm like, oh, this is a spike. This will be quick and easy. And we'll just pack it all out ourselves. And like, after we got done with that, I was like, ah, dang, we're not doing this in one trip.
Yeah. And
especially from up here.
Yeah. One observation was the meat was pink. It was like pork. It looked so, it wasn't that dark red, you know, rich color meat. It looked like a pork chop. And I got pretty excited about that.
Yeah. You were getting real excited about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was, Spoon and Crockett Club, baby. I'm going to buy you a shirt. Death to the double pokers or something. Yeah.
And then we did take the skull. I actually ended up getting it skull mounted, and they preserved the velvet on that, which
mounted
is cool.
The spike with the velvet. That is really cool.
Yep. First elk. And then Hank Shaw, I know you're not listening, but I did take the tongue.
I took the tongue. Oh, I was, when you first said you were going to do that, I was like, no, no way. And then you did.
So. Yep. And then when I gave it to the butcher, I left it in the game bag. I just turned this into burger. And then I was like, oh no, I forgot to tell him about the tongue. And then when I put all the meat in the freezer, I saw one package and they wrote it with a Sharpie tongue. So nice. Cool. I'm going to do the lengua tacos at some point.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Well, hey, you got the full experience then.
Yeah. For those who haven't listened to it, the Hank Shaw episode is fantastic. And he said one of the most underrated pieces of meat that most guys leave out in the field is that tongue. And the lengua tacos from that tongue are supposed to be incredible. So,
so awesome.
Yeah. If you haven't heard that one, that's a great listen.
Yeah. So we could probably blast through this part because guys aren't as curious, but we were like, there's no way we're getting this thing off of here in one trip. And it's, you know, it's kind of a sunny spot and we were basically like calling the troops, right? Mm-hmm. Like, please come help us. So we owe a huge thanks to D and J, who they know who they are. We're not using names. Unless someone wants to give permission, right? For walking up the hill all the way up to us. We kind of ferried both loads down around the point there after that, right?
And yeah, then,
we met them. And I think that was a cool moment for you too, because D and you have been hunting a lot together for the elk stuff. So it's cool to be like, hey, Josh got it.
Yeah. And then D, classic D, he's like, oh, wow, I can still see milk on its lips.
Yeah, that was so good. I forgot about that. Well, you did it really well. He's like, so what's that white stuff on its lips? And you're like, what? Like, what? What? And he's like, looks, oh, yeah, like the milk. Yeah, that was pretty good.
Oh, yeah, it was too good. And then they started making fun of us because we used the Garmin to communicate with them. And how far was it? Like two and a half miles, something like that.
Something like that.
And then they're like, we can't pack this thing out ourselves. We got to call in the 265-year-olds to help us.
Yeah. True. Well, that was not a fun pack. Not just coming up with that unweighted would not have been fun, much less.
Yeah, you
know, there's like with four guys, it was pretty mellow, but it would have been not fun for two guys.
Those thick willows and
it was like not fun. But yeah, it was a good kind of victory lap for everybody. It felt good.
Yeah, yeah. Some real steep portions which get a little scary, but yeah, we made it all the way out. And then it was the decision of whether to hike, drive it out then to try to go to a butcher. Mm-hmm. And I think I was debating that, whether I should do that. I think the butcher would have been closed though, right? By the time I get down there.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a good aside for guys listening to this is like, this is another reason those in-reaches are nice is that if you have called your people before, you're prepped, you're ready, you've called them before, you can text them or you could text someone to call them. Like it's possible to get it out in time because they know you're coming, but if we didn't have that option, it's like a pretty much a guarantee you're going to stay. You ended up staying anyway, but like if you are in a situation where it's going to be the difference between losing your meat or getting it out, like it pays to prep those folks and know which butcher you're calling, all that stuff, right?
Yeah, it's surprising the amount of logistics that still happen after after you shoot the animal, packing it, then getting it down to, you know, where your car is, and then getting it cool, and then getting it to the butcher in time. Where are they? What time are they going to close? So yeah, they were going to be closed by the time I drove out of there. So decided to just put it in shade, and it got cold that night.
Yeah, super cold. It was perfect. I think originally I was like, gotta get this out because it's been overnight, but I think it was, you know, Dee had a great point, which, you know, I'm always a little anxious to get stuff done if I think it's the right thing to do. But he was like, listen, you're going to get it to the butcher at like what, 6 or 7 if you get out now. He's like, that's when it starts getting really cold here. And then it's going to be like 25, 30 tonight. So like, what's the difference? I'm like, that's a really good point.
Right.
Everybody's pretty jazzed. 3 all tagged out. And yeah, that was a good feeling. And then you, next day you kind of had a decision to make too, because you'd taken the whole week off vacation time. You're like, listen, it's Monday. I can start working and save 4 vacation days. So you actually just headed out for good, right?
Yeah. So yeah, this was actually a really cool, this is totally not related to hunting, but, just a cool part of life is, I had friends who were going to this music festival in Las Vegas called Life is Beautiful. It's like a bunch of different music artists play their 3-day festival, whatever. And they all wanted me to go really bad. And I told them I was going to be elk hunting, so I couldn't go. And I told them there's a small chance if I get an elk early, maybe I'll go. Anyway, shoot that elk on Sunday night. We leave it there Monday. No, wait. I shoot on Monday.
I can't remember at this point.
Can't remember. I think it was Monday. Yeah, Tuesday morning I go out there. So I'd go out, drive to the butcher, drop it off, call a bunch of taxidermies, figure it out, drop that off. And then I decided to go back to work Wednesday, Thursday. And then I flew to Vegas and I surprised them all there, which was really cool. And those faces is something I will never forget as well. So all in all, just a great, great experience. Yeah, I walk into the lobby while they're walking in at the same time. And I'm like, hey, what's up, guys? And they're like, what the hell?
Totally surprised them.
Yeah, I thought you were elk hunting. So you got one. They were like, you got one. So I got to tell the story again and all that. So
that's dope. Yeah. You glossed over something pretty quick there, which I think we had a ton of discussion about. And because for guys that are truly hunting their first elk, or even guys that have shot 2 or 3, the butcher is a highly stressful moment. Right? Like you've got to decide what you do with that entire elk under
the gun,
very sleep deprived. Like, so what, it's probably worth talking this through for some guys. Like, what did you end up doing with the meat? I can talk about what I did with the meat and like what I do now. Like, how did you make that decision? And
yeah,
are you regretting it or happy with it right now?
That's a great point. So it was overwhelming. I was like looking at the options, like they weren't very like, you know,
no, they were not very communicative there. Yeah. Like, what do you want?
Yeah. It's not like a great customer service experience going to a butcher. They're like, all right, what do you want? And I was like, what options do I have? And they're like, you could do burger, you could do steaks, you could do chops. Okay. Chops,
you can do sausage, you can do pepperoni sticks,
right?
You can do jerky. Sausage, you can do 4 types of sausage. You can do ground with fat or ground without fat. You can do, you know, steaks, roasts. There's a lot of decisions there.
Yeah, roasts, that's the word I was looking for. So I was like, what do most people do? And she said, you know, pick a few specialties and the rest we can turn into burger or roasts. And so I ended up doing the summer sausage, I think it is, the 10-pound one.
Yep.
And then I did the rest. I just decided half roast, half steaks.
Yeah.
And then the rest burger. Nice. I didn't want to do a bunch of jerky and the sticks and everything. I think I wanted to cook a lot of it. And then I left and I realized they didn't even tell me about the fat thing. So I had to call them back actually and be like, wait, by the way, do you put fat in the burger? How much fat? What kind of fat? So I just asked for 10%.
Nice. That's a good, not a bad number.
Yeah. And I dropped off, I think it was 98 pounds on the bone.
Yeah.
And I got, no, I dropped off 120.
I was going to say it's got to be more than that.
I think it was 118. Yeah. I think that's what it was. 118, 120, something like that. And then I came back with 98 afterwards. Nice.
Because we did, I think my spike, we took a ton off that spike too, like literally almost everything we could get.
Except the tenderloins, we couldn't get those.
Yeah.
But anyway.
No. So on yours, I'm sorry, talking about mine. Did we get those? We got the tenderloins out of mine.
Yeah, you got them on yours.
Yeah. So we got everything. And so mine was 190 bone in with everything.
Right.
And so I think if we did more apples to apples, it'd probably be like 180. Mm-hmm. But that's about what we're saying, like 66%, right? Like,
yeah, it's not that much smaller.
Not much. I mean, it's definitely smaller, but it's not like I honestly, if I'm going to start picking up two tags a year or something, I'm going to start thinking about shooting spikes.
Yeah.
I think it's also the perfect elk for your first elk. Like if I had to argue for one elk, I think it is the one, because it's still a bull. You still get to shoot something with little antlers and have a good memento, but it's only up from there. Like you've got any elk next year is going to be bigger, right? Like it's a cool progression to kind of slowly build up like that. I think I and a lot of these guys have this thing of like, I want to shoot a giant, but I feel like if you shoot a giant your first year, it kind of stinks because where are you going to go from there?
Right.
It's always like, I feel like life is about like the pursuit and the process. It's always great to have a goal. Not that a giant is my goal anymore. Like I like to shoot ones that taste good. It's more about the experience, but anyway, I thought it was really, really cool. And you know that it's the only elk you like really know it's going to taste good, because cows can be super variable, like the one I shot. And then bulls, I guess if the raghorns are below, they're going to taste really good. It's like
even during the middle of the rut for raghorns.
Well, the smallest raghorns don't really rut. You know, they just don't, and they're so tender. They're so No, that was good. Yeah, the butcher thing for me, like I remember the first year I went, and I just kind of did like somewhat everything. And it depends on the butcher, but I feel like it's kind of a crime with elk to do too much sausage because it's so good without it.
Right.
It's a little tough. Over the years, we've just gone. I basically give numbers for things that I don't want too much of, and the things that I care about, I just say do the rest. Mm-hmm. So I typically will just go in and say. Now I go in and I say, okay, backstrap steaks, because like that's good. Backstraps, yeah. Tenderloins, duh. And then I'll say like for the roast, we actually do a decent amount of roasts now because we've like slow cookers and crock pots are really great with elk meat. Mm-hmm. Like the pulled pork type elk we do, and the stuff Hank Shaw was talking about, like the what do they call that with
ossobuco,
like other like little things like that are really good. So we do I do that, and I say, hey, like then 10 roasts, use the back legs, and then I'll say like, I did two of those 10-pound summer sausages, and then
nice,
or 5-pound, I forget, and then like 10 or 20 pounds of other sausage, then like the rest of it turn into burger. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's something we use all the time. We love like burger. You can't go wrong.
And then you guys make stroganoff. Oh, one thing I did tell them was the back straps, just cut them in half. I just did them.
Oh, okay. You did a full, like a big chunk of strap.
Yeah. Or I think I said cut them in like 1 foot long ish chunks. So I think I ended up getting 5 or 6 packages of back strap.
Awesome.
Yeah. And one of one of them, I rubbed it with garlic, paprika, smoked salt, pepper. I put in the trigger for like an hour, low temp, and then reverse seared it, and then let it rest and cut them in medallions, just like Hank Shaw said.
Yep.
That was a crowd pleaser. I had 4 people over for dinner. It was incredible.
Nice. Yeah. I bet that mountain veal there.
Oh my gosh. There was actually some part of the meats on the outside that had a stink to it. And I think it's because, I think it's because I left it out too long, like those 2 days. So just the exterior, the exterior that meat dries out. Mm. So it had a little stink. So I had to shave off a little bit of it.
Do a little bit of that. Yeah.
Well, besides that,
it's good something to say, because if you do get meat that you think is bad, you can always cut meat off, right? It's pretty easy to do. Just don't throw the whole thing away. What a waste. Oh man.
Yeah. I just had to trim a little bit. Amazing though. Yeah.
And I think the package size too is another thing we've learned over the years. Like for 2 people, when it was just Margaret and I, if you get them to do 1-pound packages, most places will do like 2 or 3, they'll do like pretty big ones. Mm-hmm. You can ask specifically for just do a 1-pound serving size. Yeah. And that's phenomenal. It's so much better than even the grocery store, because nothing at the grocery store comes in 1-pound sizes.
Right.
It's like super small. So you just thaw one thing for 2 people. And it's really easy to thaw 5 of them if you're doing like a giant thing of lasagna. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
They thaw faster too because they're smaller. So everything about that was great.
Yeah. So how much elk you've been eating these days? If you took like your average week, like how much elk do you guys eat?
Oh man, I don't think it's changed. We just eat a lot of it all the time. Nice. I had elk meatloaf tonight and last night. Mm-hmm. I'd say we probably go through at least 2 or 3 pounds a week.
Yeah.
As a group of 2.5 people, 2.25 people.
Yeah.
He's tiny.
Yeah.
So, but he eats like crazy. So yeah, we go through a lot of elk. Yeah. If you add that up during the course of the year, I mean, that's, what is that? We are probably 10, 15 pound packages shy of finishing the whole elk from last year. So,
oh wow.
And that's with almost no help. Well, that's with no help and it coming 2 months later than when I shot it.
Wow. Yeah.
And moving. So it was, yeah. So we eat a lot. We love awesome. It. It's honestly, like, I'm going to have a hard time ever going for larger bulls. Cause I think I've just learned so much. Like, I really enjoy the process and like, it just isn't about the size of the animal for me anymore. Like, I've kind of got that big one, but like, I think I'll always only do that if I know I can go shoot a smaller elk with a rifle or like earlier.
Right. Right.
So you mean good.
It'll be harder and harder for you to pass up elk.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just like, for me, it's what we eat year round. It's phenomenal. I love the excuse to go get something every year. You know what, you know, just to like, just to be there and enjoy it. Like, I don't, we have this weird thing in society where you got to maximize everything and it's all about the biggest animal. And like, I think what I've come to realize is like, it's not, it doesn't mean anything to me personally. The only reason I'd ever do something like that is external validation or like ego or, you know, right. Like, oh, I shot a big elk and, mm-hmm. Trust me, I'm sure as hell not turning down a big six, like no big deal. Like I'm not up on a high horse being like, do whatever, but like for me, actively seeking it out would be hard if I knew it meant the difference between opening that freezer every, you know, day or day and a half and thinking, golly, I'm so excited about this.
Yeah.
And eating this, you know? So it's going to be hard.
That's a really, really, that can of worms you may have just opened is a very deep, subject about competition and also where we find our value. Like, do we find it in the external validation that everyone's going to give you for shooting a big bull, or do you find it in simply the pursuit and who you become in the process, like not the result, you know? And it's my archery instructor, my coach Roger, he talks about how the people who will become like really legendary in sports are often the people who bring the sport beyond what it was before. Like, they didn't continue playing in the rules.
Yeah.
Cause you can only achieve a certain amount. Like for example, the best competition surfers or whatever, they're still playing in the rules. Then there's someone like Laird Hamilton who basically invents big toe in big wave surfing and then foil boarding. Like, he didn't really care about external validation. He didn't compete at all. He didn't want to win any trophies. He did it simply for the pursuit, and he ends up changing the sport forever. And so it's a really deep point you bring up about, you know, everybody going for the horns. And I hope this is something that changes in the hunting community going forward, is to become more of like a spiritual pursuit or personal growth experience through hunting and not just like this rack on the wall to show off.
Yeah. And I think I'll say two things. One is that's right for me. I have zero, I'm not sitting here judging someone who's trophy on your, like I have zero reservations if that's what really floats someone's boat and they're super into it. And like, that's what keeps them going day in, day out. And that's why they like elk hunting. Like, I think at the end of the day, like, hunting is a good force. And even like trophy hunting is actually good for the world. It brings money to the right places. It, you know, I would still fight that fight. So I don't want to like come off as judging other folks that do say that's their thing. I think for me personally, but what I would say is I've noticed too, like, if you are, I'd say like a majority of the hunters that live here and are places where they hunt consistently, and they're not folks that do it a few years and leave, or they're flying into an exotic destination, or, you know, like the folks that are just truly hunting, I feel like that is the majority of folks. Their attitude is like, they're there for the attachment. They're there for the camaraderie. They're there for the passion. And that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the big bull. Like, I think everyone talks about the big bull, right? Cause you got to have something to pursue, and you got to like, yes, around the campfire, and you get really excited about it, and you know, but I think it's yeah, I feel like the healthy relationships with hunting I've seen have been folks that are not totally consumed about it.
Yeah. I hope I don't pass something up in the future. I hope I just keep shooting what, you know, the ones in front of me when I get the opportunity. Well, unless I it's like I've got like 20 days planned and it's the first day and I just want to stay out longer. Maybe I don't pass something up. Just, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you saw me, I was passing stuff up last year to try to shoot something large. It's the only way it's really the only way you can do it. Cause it's so stinking hard to shoot an elk in the first place. Mm-hmm. But if you think about the odds of that, and then you throw in the odds that I'd say of 1 in 10 elk you see are a 6-point, right, like a legal elk you're going to shoot in most places, then you do the math of that. It takes you 20, 30. Well, you know, if every guy shoots one every 10 years, you're never going to shoot one in your lifetime, or like 1/4 of the guys are going to shoot them. Cause you add that up, it's like 100-something years. I'm just doing numbers here, right? But
yeah,
so you're gonna have to, if you want to shoot a big bull, you're gonna have to target it, or you're going to have to pass a few little ones in a season. Like that's the reality of it. You might get lucky and something runs out, but that's luck, not intentionality. So
yeah.
I think I can also I'm gonna be really honest too, which is like it's pretty easy for me to say that now that I've got a bigger one.
Right.
You know, like it's not
right, it's a big one.
It's not like a monster. Like it's for sure, you know, quote unquote Pope and Young trophy bull. Like it's a big stink, it's a monster, you know, not monster, it's like a big bull. But yeah. So I'm not trying to claim I hit the pinnacle because I sure as heck didn't, but it certainly is easier to get that and then be like, okay, this isn't, you know, make that decision versus if you haven't, you'll always kind of wonder. I don't know. Like you said, it's a can of worms. Maybe we don't dwell on it too long because we could talk for 2 hours on this.
yeah it is a good point, I guess. Last thing I'll say is the skill, matching the skill with the with the challenge is part of it too, right? Like if you're just a beast of a bow hunter and it's just more fun for you to shoot 6 points and pass up the other ones because you have so many great opportunities, then yeah, why not, you know? I guess personally I'm not there yet. I should probably shoot my first cow I see.
It's so spot on. I think you call that a really, really important thing, which is it's all like everything about life is to some degree, there's absolutes. I believe faith-wise, a lot of the reason there are absolutes, but that there a lot of stuff is subjective. And the greatest problem with politics, hunting, whatever it is that you fail to evaluate the differences between you and that other person.
Right.
And so, yeah, if I had a month to hunt, am I shooting a raghorn when it walks out day 3? Heck no. You know, I got all the time in the world, right?
Right.
I mean, I'd probably try to get 2 tags so I could shoot one and then go for the other. Mm-hmm. But if there's guys that they've orchestrated their entire life where they're hunting for a month and, you know, they've been hunting for 10, 20 years and they've shot a ton of elk, like, yeah, heck yeah. Maybe that's their thing. Like I said, and that's why I don't want to judge someone else. But for guys like us, which I think is most of the podcast, is, you know, people that have a week, right? Mm-hmm. A vacation time. I fortunately have more now that I live here. But if you've only got a week, I think it's really interesting to me because I talk to a lot of guys that are like, oh, I want to shoot a big 5 or a small 6 at least. And I'm like, this is, dude, you've got 1 week and you're from Pennsylvania. Like you're setting yourself up for failure, you know? So I think there's realities of elk hunting too.
Yeah. So actually I take back what I said, you know, cause I can't just say absolutely, I hope to never pass something up. That's just a blanket generalization. Who knows? I hope to continue to match the skill and the challenge appropriately and go from there.
Yeah. 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 Maybe next year you're like, well, first weekend, no cows. And you know, like you might, you'll see. It'll probably
we'll
change
see.
Over time.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll
but
see.
That'll be so. Part of the fun of the journey is that we get to keep doing it. Just see where it goes.
Yeah. And I'm glad we did discuss this topic because it's, you know, it's a very nuanced subject and I just, you know, take back what I said earlier. Continuing to hone that nuanced opinion here. So it's part of the growth, I think, like the ethics and the why you do things. And not every podcast talks about that. So, you know, listeners, if you like this stuff, let us know. Or we could just not talk about this if this is not your
get
thing.
Off our high horses.
Yeah.
The last thing I will say on that is I have a lot of respect for you, Josh, because I don't know if there's not many guys, even with this stuff we're talking about, and they can say this, that, and the other, that have the ego to go out there and shoot a spike and be stoked on it. You know what I mean? Like it's, I'm not trying to put you down in any way. I'm just trying to say like a lot of guys don't have the ability to buck the trend and be like, no, like I'm stoked with that. And you were genuinely excited and you genuinely knew what you wanted and you did it and you had zero regrets, which is really cool. So I think a lot of other hunters could learn from that of like, stop going for the horns, your first elk, and stop trying to do this crazy experience and you know, just get out there. And like any elk with a bow is a trophy. We had a few people hunting this year who were hunting for cows and they didn't touch one. And it's any elk with a bow is a trophy. So yeah, kudos.
Yeah. Man. Thank you. Anything else we should cover today or?
I guess we could probably talk real quick about my time hunting with Margaret after.
Yeah.
Cause we had a bunch of other encounters and so she had a tag and obviously Josh was off to his. And so I instantly tagged in to try to get her onto one. We had a bunch of really close encounters. So I can kind of go through those. But we were fundamentally handicapped because we basically could only go out when the little dude was asleep. So we had about 45 minutes of sunlight in the morning and we had about 45 minutes of sunlight in the evening.
Yeah.
Maybe an hour. Unfortunately, we had people in camp. We had an RV that locked so we could just put him in the RV and lock it. Or, you know, in the morning, we just locked on our way out and didn't wake him up. So we had that. And so I really intentionally spent a lot of time scouting around camp in the summer and the previous year because I knew this was coming and had picked out two spots I thought were really good, three or four actually, but like two we ended up utilizing most of the time. And then I'd put a cam on these two kind of pinch points and spent a lot of time looking at that. And one of them actually ended up being really good. There were a lot of things going through there. So I made sure to just leave it totally untouched. Cause I'm fully convinced if you spend more than a day or two hunting elk in an area, they're out of there. And so one of them was very stinking close, 200 or 300 yards from where we were. And, I probably can't talk too much about it. Cause I know as we've learned, there's like people now that like listen to this and know where we're hunting and other stuff. So, but long story short, I'm trying to remember the first morning there was a bull bedded over there. And she walked up within 40 yards of the thing bedded. It was all on the willows. So what's happening is all these elk coming down and eating a lot of the willows because it was so dry this year that the willows were one of the only green things. And so we got all the way over there and she bumped that elk from its bed that morning. Like, oh, son of a gun. So but it was really cool because it's like, hey, we're into elk this stinking close to camp. We almost got one. We came back, I think that night, what happened? We went out a little further and almost got into another set of them, but then they all started to bugle. It's like we could hear them that night. And so they were bugling all night long. And the next morning we went back to the same place we'd gone the other morning because the one over there was bugling. And this was like one of the hardest things for me ever because we learned a lot of lessons from this. We went over to where it was. We got her. We heard him bugling, got him pretty close. I bugled. He came in, smelled us, turned around, ran away. And then I started calling, got him to come in again. And he came back to within 100 yards and he was passing the camera I'd put up there each time. So we could literally go to that camera. I had the photos and be like, oh, that was the time he came back. And that was the time he went away. And then that's us 5 minutes later. It was such
crazy,
a brutal morning of hunting. Cause it was so cool to be bugling at elk and having that experience for her. She didn't even know if she was going to be able to hunt elk. So she's all fired up that it's even a possibility that they're that close. But got him to come in twice. And I think I'm just fully convinced there's like a 2-day window every year where like you can make magic happen. And that was when I called in the big one last year. Like there's just this 2-day window where they're starting to gather cows and they're excited and like you can get away with murder and he can smell you twice and come back. So for me, that was kind of solidified that opinion. And I was like, okay, this is the window I need to be here for. We give away a lot of secrets on this podcast, so I'm not going to talk about exactly when and where and how that window happens. Like that one, we're not giving away for free, but I'm very fired up for the 2-day window.
Well, you stay out there long enough, you'll experience it.
You'll find it.
Yeah.
It's there. And so, I thought that was happening. I really thought that was happening. She did too. So it was really hard that didn't happen.
Yeah. So after that hunt, how did you feel coming back?
Yeah, it was kind of a bummer because I thought, hey, that was our best chance. And it ended up that it was. Like, I was like, that was really the one. And he wasn't a monster, but he was a big, he was a good size 5x5. And that would have been an amazing bull for her to shoot.
Yeah, first one. Yeah, that'd be really cool.
She would have been fired up. So yeah, I was pretty bummed, I gotta say. And it was interesting hunting because it was literally like I said, 45 morning, 45 dark. So it was really cool just to hang out with her and little guy and just like play during the day. It was really fun to just relax. So that was a cool upside of it. And then we had two other really close encounters. We got a bunch of elk across a very large meadow that we tried to call in. Strangely enough, like I called in a single cow almost again. Like, apparently my calling, my lost calf call really works on calves. So we almost had that, that work out. And then, what else? Oh yeah. And then we jumped a bull walking through an area, the same area the next morning. And so we had a ton of close encounters, really close encounters. But I think the lesson of all those things I learned there is that I just have never realized, because when you're in the high country or you're backpacking, you kind of get to dictate the terms and you set the playing field. When it's like that, when they're down low, there's a lot of areas you can't go and you kind of have to come from your RV and all these things. Like you can't approach them the way you want or from where you want or set up where you are. And I think it really reinforced, we've talked about this and I've said it a million times, guys, you know, like hunt high, hunt from above them, or like it really reinforced how important that is, because there were two or three times she probably would have killed one of those elk, but we had to approach across a creek that had a ton of willows. We had to approach through a thick area of brush. You know, we had to approach from somewhere the wind was somewhat shifty, because we just had to come from the RV every morning, you know?
Right.
And that's just such a massive handicap. I don't think I realized it until I was forced to live with it the other way. So that was a huge, huge learning for me. It's like, yeah, that's probably the major utility of backpacking, is you set the chess pieces the night before or the afternoon of. It's just so hard chasing elk uphill in the morning. There's almost no way to set that up well. You're really depending on a lot of luck.
Yeah. Right. It's incredible though, like to have a handicap of having a baby.
Yeah.
And staying in an RV and to still have encounters like that is magic.
Yeah. Trust me, I did a lot of scouting where we hunt and a lot of other areas to try to figure out where that was going to be. So I'm pretty glad it worked out.
Yeah, that is some
magic,
black voodoo. Magic. Yeah, some crazy voodoo, whatever. something. Someone's out there looking out for you guys. That many encounters that close. That's pretty cool.
And I was all fired up because Saturday was Chucker. Coming back was Chucker opener, and I was like, "Oh, I'm gonna go get to do this." And we drove all the way home, and I got to get it there, and I got to go to my, you know, great spot, and I didn't shoot a single one. And Sunday I went out and didn't get anything. It was like whiff, whiff opening day.
What was the day where you shot, you had that group? What was it? Did you shoot four of them or five of them?
I shot five. I shot a triple on Chucker, which is that felt really good.
Yeah. But that was that the week after?
That was the week after.
Okay.
It was so funny. It was like every time you get a little cocky with hunting, you're like, oh yeah, got one, called one in for Josh. Almost got one for Margaret. It's like these little birds kick you in the nuts.
That's hilarious.
It was awesome. It was a really cool way to end the trip. Just like, I was just grinning when I came home. I was like, stay humble. It's always going to get you. So
yeah. That's hunting, right?
That's hunting.
Wow.
But I think that's it. And we could probably do a retro on gear and things we learned and other stuff. But I think that is the story of the two bulls.
Yeah, crazy. The story of the two bulls in three episodes. Hope you enjoyed. And then we'll do some recap ones specifically about lessons or tactics, kind of like we did last year. I think that would be fun too, just to, to extract the learnings from it now that we've gone and reflected through the whole story.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fun season. Wait, what are we? Is this season two, season three of the show going into next year?
I don't even know. I know it's 2022 elk season. That's all I care about.
Yeah, we're going to start the monthly check-ins starting next month.
What do we got, Josh? Like 315 days?
Oh, gosh. Can't wait.
We're back. But it's a great time to, it's just a great time to plan for next year because everyone's selling their stuff. It's,
oh my gosh, that's to buy right now. Starting
freaking December, which is what, a month away. So it's back on. The second you think you're done, you're hunting again.
Yep,
so,
yep. Hopping back on the train. But yeah, right now is a great time to buy stuff, huh?
Yep.
Anyway, we can go into that another time.
Too much. Awesome. Well, thanks guys for tagging along. Shoot us some thoughts. I really, really want to hear from, there's four or five folks I can think of that all reached out and like we've talked, gone back and forth with a few times. So I really want to know how your season went. So drop us a line and then also let us know how you, yeah, what you thought of the recap and all the stuff. So as always, we absolutely love it that you're here. Appreciate you listening and we'll be back for a whole lot more.